Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock himself. And joining me, as always, is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. Alex, how you doing?
Doing good. It's interesting night in basketball. Had some good women's games going on, but kind of as we were both talking, thought that men's game tonight was going to be a good one. Looked like it wasn't, but now seems like it's coming back around. But got a lot to get to in Gamecock land tonight as well.
Yeah, I think I'm just looking at the score. It's a commercial now, but I think that Duke was up by like 17, and I think Connecticut has it down to like 3 or 4. So, kind of my tagline here. I don't have my Twitter handle, but we got a final three. Who's going to be the fourth? You'll learn with us as we continue to watch this game unfold. We're going to talk some basketball tonight. Will Bailey, the news came out over the weekend that he is no longer with the South Carolina basketball program. That makes two assistants that are no longer with the program. So they're going to be looking for at least two guys. I'll have some information on that. Well, nothing new, stuff I shared before, and I'll go ahead and get it out of the way. I do think that Lamont Paris is looking for some more NBA background with his assistant coaches and maybe someone taking on a GM role there. But we got a lot to talk about with basketball tonight. Baseball, y'all, I'm sorry. It's really hard right now. The baseball team fell to 13-16 on the season, 1-8 in SEC play, lost all three games to Georgia. Final score 2-5, 1-3, and 7-9. Thought the Gamecocks would potentially have a chance today, Alex, but numerous defensive miscues might have, just doomed them in the end. And it's one of those things where the baseball team, despite the coach, can't seem to get out of their way. So it's difficult, but remember what Ray Tanner always said: you want to win two out of your three home series. You want to take one out of three on the road, and then you want to take your sweeps where you can get them. When, like Monty Lee said, Alex, this is a new season starting with the second game of Arkansas. I think the Gamecocks have been very competitive in all the games, despite the game against North Carolina over the midweek, where that eighth inning just kind of got away from them. The women did get revenge, Alex, on Oklahoma in the women's college basketball tournament, defeating Oklahoma by a final score of 94-68. They have TCU in Sacramento, California tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Before I turn it over to Alex for his off-the-cuff thoughts, I want to give a shout out to Frederick Cooper and EXO. Thank you for being here tonight. And yeah, it is awesome how the ladies beat Oklahoma. That was good to see, right, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it was a game where, you saw in the regular season, South kind of obviously fell in the regular season at Oklahoma. Chavez is a really, really good player and just really got going at overtime. But, South kind of did a really good job in that game yesterday, kind of with Chavez. And Chavez is going to get her points, but you got to kind of limit everybody else. And that's what happened. But, they kind of through these first three games in the NCAA tournament, like they've gotten off to really hot starts. I think that's something that's helped them where you're getting off to double digit to zero runs. And I think that's just something they learned from in that Texas game and the SEC tournament. You remember they kind of got off to a slow start and dug themselves too far into a hole to get out of it. But they're playing just about as well as they've been playing throughout the whole season. And you're going to have another really tough test on tomorrow night in Sacramento with Olivia Miles and those with TCU. I mean, Miles is averaging 19.6 points per game, a really good player. But it's going to be one of those really tests where you're going to be kind of watching the paint battle on this one. But it should be a really good game.
Absolutely. And I thought it was nice that UConn kind of showed some chinks in their armor today. They were a 27.5 point favorite. They won by 18. You'd like to see UConn come back to the field a little bit. We'll see if the Gamecocks get another opportunity with Texas, because Texas has seemed to have their number two out of three times this year. But I like Alex said, I think the women are playing the best they've played this entire season at the right time. That's what you're always trying to do with basketball. Looking at this Duke Connecticut game. Again, Connecticut was down by 17. It's now a 4-point game with 3 minutes to go. So, wow. I hope you guys are watching us and them. Appreciate it. Appreciate
Yeah.
everyone for being here. Alex, I'm going to tease this and we're going to come back to it right after we have the introduction here. But South Carolina picked up a commitment in the 2026 class. Kind of weird to say. When we come back, we'll talk all about that on the Late Night Gamecock Show.
Turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooktown. cocks will let me down.
Welcome back into the show. Again, my name is Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock, and joining me is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. Alex, off the cuff here, if I had told you that the South Carolina 2026 recruiting class was not done and they were going to add an additional offensive lineman, and that offensive lineman was not going to come from the JUCO ranks, was not going to come as a late graduate transfer, but that this kid was going to come from Ireland via Nigeria, be 6'7", 295 pounds, and play rugby. Was that on your bingo card?
No, absolutely not. And it feels like they just keep adding on to this 26 class. Thought it was done here after signing day, but obviously got Ashton Mazone, the JUCO out of Iowa Western. Then today I got the news that Neff Giwa, I believe I'm saying that right, is 6'7", 280, I think around 290-pound offensive tackle from Ireland, has signed with South Carolina. And, you know, his name kind of came onto the radar probably last week or so, maybe a little bit before that. And, you know, he's part of the PPI group, where that's actually the same organization that Justin Okwankwo came from. And they do a really good job of, you know, getting guys who, you know, maybe from overseas or whatever, and kind of, you know, get them into football. And they've done a really good job. And this is just kind of the next one. And really an intriguing pickup for, you know, just what he can bring at that 6'7", 290-pound frame guy that, you know, played a little bit of soccer, I think, to start, and then a former rugby player. So you have some of that aggression already in there. But at that 6'7", 290-pound frame, like, can really move well. Now, obviously, having never played football before, there's going to be some things that he's going to have to pick up. But at the very least, going to be some depth there. But, you know, also have to, like, you know, what else could they do with him for some things, either be it special teams or, you know, heck, maybe some, you know, offensive things. And not to say that I've heard that that's going to happen, but just something you can wonder and think about that they could do, just because he seems to be so athletic with his background in rugby and some other sports, but then also just some of the film you've seen of him. But, you know, it's a spot on the offensive line, especially that tackle spot, that they do need some depth for. And kind of just seems like, you know, a low-risk type of thing where you can get him in and see if you can develop him, because the guy, it seems like he has a lot of potential if he can just kind of put everything from a football standpoint together.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is he's not being asked to catch a football or throw a football or run with a football, which maybe they want to put him in a jumbo package, I don't know, on a goal line situation and just say, hey, it's like a scrum. Just like rugby, end zone. Yeah, a lot of versatility with him. When you think 6'7", 295 with 37-inch arms and probably a standing 9 foot, 9.5 foot reach, something ridiculous like that.
I believe
it's kind of hard to draw them up any differently. And yeah, if you're going to take a raw prospect that has no warts yet, and, you know, from talking to some folks, is, you know, both of his parents are extremely educated. It seems like a very, very smart kid. This is a news story that actually hit ESPN.com today. I saw that. So it's going to be a story that's going to make noise. I think Hamel Granahan said it really well in the Big Spur today. Like, if there's one thing he feels like he can guarantee you, it's going to be this will be a story on ESPN College Game Day at some point. And look, hopefully for the Gamecocks, it's a great story. I do like the idea of having a kid that doesn't have any bad habits. Everything he's going to do, he's going to pick up on the fly. I like the fact that he's from Nigeria and his family moved to Ireland, so he's already adapted to a different culture once, and to be as athletically gifted as he is, we'll see what happens. I feel like every Gamecock fan in the world just thinks like, wow, we got, you know, the Neon Badeau from south down in Louisiana and blue chips that no one's ever heard of before that's just going to dominate. But it's exciting, man. I think it is, at least.
Yeah, and you know, maybe end up being wrong here, but you feel like from an offensive line standpoint, whether from a tackle standpoint, it may be a year where he did until he's ready to go, just because he does have the physical traits, but he's still got to, you know, put on some more weight and think, or some more muscle weight, things like that. Obviously, he's already pretty well, you know, muscled and things like that, but that's gonna be from a, it could be maybe a year, just to get the technical stuff down. But again, goes back to like, what else can you do with this guy? Like, can you do some things that you mentioned off the top, maybe even from a special team standpoint? So maybe, you know, it may not end up being a redshirt year if they do go and do some of the special team stuff, and maybe a redshirt year from an offensive line standpoint, but seems to be a kind of a high, you know, potential type of prospect here.
Alex, I've heard a million different ways of saying, like, a player is put together or is, you know, athletically gifted or very strong. I think you should trademark, or if you don't, I will. Well-muscled. He's a well-muscled individual.
I was trying to think of a word, and nothing but muscle just came out, so we just ran with it.
He's well-muscled. yeah. Trying to watch his progress. I love stories like this. I absolutely love kids getting that opportunity. You know, I'll tell a quick story. It's not a Gamecock one, but it is South Carolina related. I was a Boy Scout. I'm an Eagle Scout. And I used to go to Camp Coker a long time ago, right? And I was helping as a camp counselor, and there was this kid named Malachi Goodman that was there, and he was a Boy Scout, and he was working on his Eagle. Malachi is from Florence. Obviously, he played defensive end at Clemson, played in the NFL for a while. He had never really played basketball before, and, of course, I was always on the basketball courts. And so I'll never forget, I was trying to teach him a drop step, and he ended up just jumping backwards, turning around, and just dunking the basketball, and said, "This just looks easier." And I was like, "Yeah, you don't have to jump step if you can do, or drop step if you can do that." So maybe it'll be the same case with this kid from Ireland. So again, excited to see what happens there. Alex, I just realized that we haven't talked about this recruiting class that South Carolina has so far in a long time. I know we talked about Amari Fountain. We've talked about Jernard Albright. Jernard Albright's a safety, 6'2", 205 pounds out of Georgia. He is a four-star. He's one of the top players in the country. And Amari Fountain as well, one of the top players in the country, 6'3", 190-pound DB. We've talked about how these two guys are exactly how Torian Gray wants his secondary players. But we haven't talked about Jaden Kelly-Murray, 5'10", 170 pounds, out of Oceanside Collegiate Academy, Mount Pleasant. So, Alex, what can you tell us about this young man and potentially what he can bring to the South Carolina wide receiver room?
Yeah, had a really good year as a junior season at Somerville High School, and now he's going to transfer to Oceanside. Saw him in person one time in the state championship game against Dutch Fork, and came away really impressed with him. Had a really nice touchdown grab in that game, and you know, I think he's going to bring some twitchiness to that wide receiver spot with what he can bring. Like, but he can also, like, you know, I'm interested to see from a deep ball perspective what he can bring to the team. Then, you know, from the few highlights I've seen and some of the things I've seen from, like, he can go up in the end zone and kind of and come down footballs too. So it's going to be really kind of intriguing guy that I think, you know, this summer or this offseason has really kind of taken a step forward in his game. You're starting to see some more talk about him from a national perspective. And, you know, it'll start, you know, some teams are really after him. Illinois was after him. You know, Florida was in there involved too. So, you know, you're starting to see his recruitment blow up a little bit. And I would imagine you'll see his rankings start to, you know, go up a little bit more too. But, you know, a guy that, you know, you go ahead and get a guy like Jaden Kelly-Murray in from an in-state perspective where he can go ahead and start helping you recruit some of these other guys from an in-state perspective, but then also from a quarterback standpoint, a wide receiver standpoint, running back standpoint, because especially from a running back standpoint, we know the two in-state guys that South Carolina are after there, and actually now with the third one with the offer they threw out yesterday. But it really kind of, I think it was a really good pickup early on in this class for South Carolina, because I was wondering with him if he was going to be a summer official visit guy, maybe post-official visit, you know, take those official visits and commit. But South Carolina was able to get him in early, and I think it's going to end up being a really good get.
Yeah, Helmut Granahan, the BigSpur.com, who, you know, sees a lot of these guys just like Alex does. I've personally never laid eyes on Jaden Kelly-Murray that I can remember. Alex, maybe he was at a 7-on-7 I was at. I don't know. But 5'10", 170 really reminds me of, like, the Shai Smith-type body frame. Mm-hmm. Does he play like Shai Smith? What is his game, Alex, if you can break it down for us?
Yeah, potentially I think a little bit of Shai Smith is what you can see in him. I've seen some comps about that, and I can see that. Like, you do want to see just a little bit more of him from a route running perspective, because a lot of times you do see guys, wide receivers, take that jump from a junior to senior season from a route running standpoint. And I think he's right in line to do that this summer.
Yeah, that was the thing with Shai. From high school on, he just had the route running down. Yeah. He was that guy that could go up and high point the ball despite his size, but he also could make people miss in space. So, so the recruiting class right now is three players, two secondary guys, a safety and a wide receiver. The overall rank is 37th in the country, but there's a lot to go here. I mean, I would think that this class gets to 18, 20, 22 again, Alex.
Yeah.
I think the days of seeing 30-man recruiting classes are kind of done for South Carolina. They might not be done other places, but at South Carolina they are, because
portal.
South Carolina does have such a high blue chip ratio, really, that, I mean, it's touching 50% now, y'all. So, like, it's really just filling in the pieces and finding ways to maybe out-scheme an opponent. And, you know, we can talk about what Kendall Briles is doing there so far in spring practice, but also out-evaluate and go get those guys that might be all-conference-type performers on a team that doesn't have a chance at an SEC championship or a Big Ten championship, and bring them into the fold. So, Alex, this has been a humongous recruiting last week and a half, last 2 weeks, I feel like. But this past week, you know, what are your takeaways? And, you know, we'll save it for later, Alex, but maybe we go just position by position, some guys that you're feeling good about right now. But I'll let you start with just this week.
Yeah, you know, they kind of built, you know, these past 2 weekends as, you know, really big recruiting weekends. 2 weeks ago, or last Saturday, was probably one, you know, bigger than this Saturday. But this Saturday still had some key guys. And, I mean, DJ Hunter, his quarterback out of Buford, Georgia, who's kind of, I think, emerging as the guy at quarterback for South Carolina. And, feel, you know, I think I like South Carolina's chances there. You know, a few weeks ago when I talked to him at the Under Armour Atlanta camp in Carrollton, Georgia, he kind of mentioned, you know, South Carolina, Iowa State, and Kansas State as schools staying out for him. But, you know, I think, you know, South Carolina has done a really good job in that recruitment. Kendall Briles and, you know, I think really the whole staff FaceTimed him a few weeks ago. And I think making him feel like,
oh, my gosh, sorry. Oh, my gosh. UConn just hit a three with 0.3 seconds left from 40 feet away to take a 1-point lead with 0.3 seconds left. Oh, sorry. Man. Oh, my gosh.
We're going to have to find a highlight here and put it up on here or something.
Oh, my gosh.
Who hit it?
That freshman kid. Gosh, what's his name? Caravan passed it to him. It was Braylon Mullins,
yep,
from 40 feet on a kickback. Oh my gosh. Wow.
UConn just looked dead. UConn looked dead.
What a brutal way for Duke to go out. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's, I can't remember. Oh, DJ Hunter.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Let's just start over. Quarterback DJ Hunter.
Yeah, DJ Hunter, he'll be in for an official visit here this summer. And yeah, you know, I think I like where South Carolina stands with him. He's a former Kentucky commitment. So, you know, I think, you know, from some of the, when I saw him in Carrollton, Georgia at the Under Armour camp, was really impressed with his arm strength and things like that. Thought he threw the ball really well. So, you know, that's one guy that was in this weekend. Like, another guy that I thought was interesting that, you know, you kind of see in South Carolina with the Kendall Briles connection, get into Texas a little more in this recruiting class. And, you know, Brody Knowles was scheduled to be in this weekend, a wide receiver. From Southlake, Texas. And so I think, you know, he, you know, going to be interesting to kind of see there. Jabiah Smith, the linebacker from Swainsboro, Georgia, was scheduled to be in. And you know, he's one that, you know, he's been a long time target for that linebacker spot at South Carolina. I think, you know, kind of see he's a top of the board kind of guy. Now, you know, with him, there's going to be a lot of competition. You know, Georgia, I think, is also involved. Auburn's involved. Texas, I think Texas A&M's involved as well. So it's going to be a battle with him. But South Carolina's made him feel like a priority for a while. And another secondary guy here, Davion Jones from Charlotte, North Carolina, who's going to be teammates at Huff High School with Josh Dobson this upcoming season. Jones played at West Charlotte this past season. So, you know, he's one. It's another one that can kind of stay with Jabiah Smith at a linebacker spot. But for Davion Jones at that safety spot, guy that's been a longtime target for South Carolina. And, you know, I thought from a 28 perspective, they had some interesting guys in as well. You know, Torrey Clark is a guy that, you know, kind of caught up with here pretty recently. He's a guy that was – South Carolina was his first offer this past summer after a camp, and he's one that, you know, has kind of stayed pretty consistently in contact with South Carolina. And you know, I think kind of early on they're in a pretty good spot with him, and now still a long way to go with these 28 guys. But he's going to be one to watch at that D-tackle spot out of Woodward Academy in Atlanta. And a really intriguing guy that has really kind of, you know, emerged here from an edge standpoint in this 28 class is Castle Cruikshank from Fayetteville, North Carolina. And watching this guy's highlights, like, he, you can start to see why he's starting to get the offers he is, and you know, his rankings starting to go where they are, because he's really dynamic and really electric at that edge spot. And he, you know, I think Deion Barnes has gotten South kind of in the game with them early on, and it was his first visit to South Carolina this past Saturday. So, you know, I think South Carolina has kind of worked themselves into a good spot, but there's going to be a lot of competition from him. Like, he's got a chance to be one of the top edge prospects in the country if he continues on the track that he's on. So that was kind of from this past Saturday, you know, who the big names were that were in town. And, you know, even with a couple more weeks of spring practice, there's going to be even more names. And, like, I know April 11th is kind of being a date that I'm circling to see. There's supposed to be some guys in that weekend who, from a 27 and 28 perspective, seem to be top targets as well.
Yeah, so we kind of go through this class here a little bit, Alex, and, you know, knowing that they have three committed right now. By the way, Duke did lose that game, lost by one. They tried to do the Grant Hill to Christian Laettner play, and UConn just got up and knocked the ball down. So
now it's my turn to go fourth highlight.
Yeah, we do have a fourth Final Four team now. It is the UConn Huskies. So we'll talk all about that with Justin here later on the show. But, you know, Alex, looking at it, they have a wide receiver, they have a safety, and they have a DB. To me, it seems like RJ Hunter is the guy that they've penciled in at quarterback. I think that is trending very, very well for the Gamecocks at this point. We talked about that on previous shows. At running back, is it going to be Segura and Gibson, or is it going to be one or the other, you think, at this point, Alex?
I think they still got a shot at both. Like, I, you know, probably feel better about chances with Gibson right now, but he's also seen his, you know, recruitment kind of skyrocket a little bit. Penn State's also involved in there with him as well. And so, you know, we'll see, you know, in some other schools are starting to merge with him. But, you know, I think South Carolina's worked themselves in a good spot. You know, Cigar's also got, you know, Tennessee and Clemson battling for him. Like, that one's going to be a battle, but I think that they're right there in it. But, you know, I think, you know, you're starting to see, you know, maybe, you know, where they, you know, kind of fall in the offer board. But I think with both of those guys, they're still right in the fight.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a first-to-commit type thing with those two. I think they're kind of committed to running the race if they need to. Yeah. Obviously, I think that if they were to land those two, they might call it a day at running back, they, Alex.
Yeah, Javaris Warner is another one to keep an eye on. He's a Cincinnati commit from Georgia. He was in he'll have an OV with South Carolina this summer, and he was also in pretty recently for a spring visit. So that's another one to keep an eye on. And then, you know, then another actually, you know, in-state offer went out yesterday to a guy who visited Franklin Richardson. He plays quarterback for Sumter, but the South Carolina offered as a running back prospect, visited South Carolina as a running back prospect. So kind of keep an eye on him as well. It seems like potentially could be a guy. You know, you see guys all the time in the state of South Carolina who emerge, kind of come out of nowhere from an under the radar recruitment standpoint and end up being, you know, some of the end up higher ranked guys in the class.
Yeah, and so then at wide receiver, Jaden Kelly Murray's in the bucket already. I think he's pretty solid. Do you think that they're going to take, you know, just maybe give me numbers here, Alex? I don't think there's really a defined board after him. And honestly, I think it might be a smaller class here.
From a wide receiver standpoint?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you still got, you know, that freshman class of the from the two cycles ago who, you know, still got five or six of those guys. So, you know, I think maybe, you know, two or three or so. Avion Lewis is another guy from Virginia to watch who's got an official visit. You know, DJ Huggins is another guy who's really kind of gotten on South Carolina's radar. And I think South Carolina's in kind of a good spot for there. So, I, you know, three or so I think is where I'd put that number right now for the wide receivers.
Yeah. By the way, Alex, Justin needs the link.
I got it.
But so then let's just talk numbers right now, Alex, because we have a lot to talk about with football. And we still got to get some basketball stuff and then get Justin in here. Tight end, I would say they'd probably take two or three again this year if they could from the high school ranks. It's kind of been a portal heavy type deal. Offensive line, they're going to have to take, I would think, at least four, right? Right, Alex?
I think so. Like, they, you know, they constantly talk about, you know, building depth on that line. And I mean, that's kind of the number I think you want to be at on that offensive line. Cause you got to have your starters, but you got to build two or three guys almost at each spot at those guard and tackle and center spots behind them. So I would think that's probably where that number is too.
Yeah. I would have said four, but before they got the kid from Ireland today, who was originally a 2027 kid, and he's going to be in the 26 class. So that gives you kind of that developmental guy, but they're going to need to take four or five, and because eventually you can't just you can't take seven transfer offensive linemen every single year, right? So and then you move over defensive line. I think that on defense, like, I'm just very confident in Deion Barnes being able to identify and sell the next Dylan Stewart, right, Alex? Mm-hmm. I think that he has that pedigree. He's putting up players in the NFL that I'm not worried about that. Defensive tackle, same thing. I think Travian, you know, I just hate it for Travian because, you know, he was just getting his footing last year. The car accident happened. He had to step aside. I don't know how much recruiting he was even able to do. And now you're still trying to build that defensive tackle room up, and they're going to have to take another two or three because you just defensive tackle is one of the hardest positions to go get in the transfer portal. So you're going to have to keep building it up. They have some depth there, but I don't think enough. So I think on that defensive line, Alex, I mean, combined defensive ends and defensive tackles is 7 too high.
That was the number I was going to say, 7 combined with an edge D tackle spot, because you do have some guys you're going to have to replace from a roster standpoint in that D tackle room this coming year. So, yeah, I think 7's probably around that number for both. And it kind of also depends on, like, who they're going to be able to get, because, I mean, at that edge spot, they're after some of the top edges in the country, and guys who are going to be visiting KJ Green, Frederick Arts, Abraham Cisse. Like, are they going to get all those guys that they're really high on the list for? Obviously not. They're not going to get all of them, but you're not going to turn any of those guys down either if they want to come. So I think that's where that number kind of fluctuates. Maybe it could be one less, could be one more from that standpoint.
Yes, man. I'm just doing some rough paper napkin right here, math here. And you got 7 on the defensive line. So 1 to 5, call it 7. And then let's say 11 on the offense. You know, let's say 1 quarterback, 2 running backs, 2 to 3 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, and then a handful of offensive linemen, 7 of defensive linemen, 18. And linebacker is a spot that they didn't neglect last year because they didn't really have the need in the transfer portal. They didn't really have the need in the recruiting class, but linebacker is going to be a pretty big need this year. So I think you got to look at least 4 linebackers, and then you're going to want at least 5 defensive backs, you know, whether it's second, whether it's safety or corner. So, I mean, you're looking at 22, 23. So, long race to be run here, Alex. And, you know, people, I don't want to say people. I know that, like, in general, like, people want to know who the commits are as soon as possible. Like, just understand these visits are just happening right now. Like, Alex is talking about all these 27s that have been on campus. There are going to be a slew more for the spring game. There's going to be a slew more over the summer. I mean, Alex, you know, theoretically, I'm just thinking out loud. I feel like they want to have 15 to 17 kids committed by the end of the summer. So, I mean, it's gonna pick up here quick.
That's kind of the range of what you've seen, not only with South Carolina, but a lot of programs. That's, you know, you get to official visit season, that's when the class really can start getting built, and that's when you see in these past cycles, you know, a lot of the commits come from those official visits. And, you know, heading into the season, you kind of want to have a majority of your class for that cycle mostly done. I mean, you're going to have a few probably – you know, 4 or 5 or so guys you're going after, maybe some flip guys there, but you want to have a majority of your class done once that official visit season is over to focus on the season, then also start building those future classes.
Well, we're gonna come right back after this short break. Justin's in. We're gonna talk some overall basketball with him. Obviously, we'll get to that end of the Duke Connecticut game and then the Final Four in general, but. I do want to talk Gamecock men's basketball, too, because a lot's going on there. So, Alex, let's take us to break and hear from our very, very trusted sponsors.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cars while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck / trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. My name is Matt Anderson, and joining me, as always, is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. I want to give a big shout-out to Tommy. He's checking in from the Dominican Republic. He says he loves the show. Thank you, Tommy. He said it's true late night in the Dominican Republic. The show starts around 1 a.m. So, Tommy, thanks for sticking around with us. And XO, put that back in the chat box. What coaches did leave us? If you're talking about basketball, yeah. It was Eddie Shannon and Will Bailey.
Yeah.
Those assistant coaches are no longer with the program. So at least two spots to fill there. Let's go ahead and bring in Justin Lyles at sportscapvalue.com. So Justin, man, I know you're a big Duke hater.
Oh,
so
yes.
I know that was probably really sweet for you. We got to talk Carolina basketball, but let's get this one off your chest.
Oh, it couldn't happen to a better program, I'm telling you. But, hey, we're going to go ahead and give John Shire the Oscar the other night when he was crying postgame for his point guard. I think he deserves the Oscar for this year. I mean, it was a joke, you know, the little fake crying after the game. He deserved to lose tonight. So, it couldn't happen to a better program. And the Fighting Hurleys, I mean, I got a futures on them to win the national championship. I'm not sure they're going to win the national championship, but I did take them on the money line today. Was very lucky at the end, though. But what a game.
Yeah, I got to say, Alex, and you both, I don't know if you've seen it, Justin, but Alex has. I took 4 UConn Huskies in my annual NCAA tournament players fantasy draft. So that was a big – I had Cam Boozer. I had number one overall picks. I took Cam Boozer. It's points, rebounds, and assist. So either way, I was going to come away with, you know, a lot of points tonight. But, wow, like to get UConn going to the Final Four, go Huskies.
I just didn't – you know, I don't think anybody had a – you know, could stop Boozer regardless. If they'd have won, I just don't think anybody was going to stop him. And for UConn to come back, it's just – I will say I filled out one bracket and I got all 4 right, fortunately, with them hitting that shot. So nice. I'll take it.
Yeah, so my phone is going bananas over here, by the way, as you guys can probably imagine. Every year I go on a big March Madness retreat with, you know, 6 guys that I've known forever. And it's going nuts. Real quick, is this a fireable offense for John Shire? Some people are saying it is after back-to-back big lead surrendered against Houston last year and then 17 points today to UConn. I don't think you fire him, but that's a stigma that's going to haunt him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he loses last year in the Final Four. You know, that's Coach K's little puppet, his boy. So, I mean, Coach K would be very upset if they got rid of Shire. I will say be on the lookout for him to take the Bulls job. You know, I could see that because he's from that area. He's from Chicago. I would not be surprised. But we'll see. I mean, Duke pays well, and I just don't know. That Chicago Bulls team needs something. It's not working with Billy Donovan, and I could see Shire. Duke's not going to get rid of Shire. They just got unlucky tonight.
Yeah, well.
Is Billy Donovan going to take that North Carolina job?
That's the question.
I don't know, man. North Carolina's got to do something. Usually, you know, they hire within, you know, the program that somebody has a history with them. But it looks like they're going outside the program. So, I mean, he seems like the leading candidate from an odds perspective.
Oh, man. What if John Shire went to North Carolina? That'd be something. I do want to give a shout out to Jay Diz. I'm not going to read what he wrote because I don't think I can on YouTube. But shout out to Jay Diz there. I do want to take a kind of a macro look. You know, the Final Four is set now, and what Gamecock fans are wondering is how do the Gamecocks find their way back in the NCAA basketball tournament? So I've done just a little bit of work here. This is all surface level. There's so much nuance to basketball, and I could do 5 hours a day till the end of time on shows just explaining the nuances and the analytics and everything that goes into what makes a program or a team good on a given night, on a given year. But let's just look at what South Carolina really has to do. The first thing in my mind is they have to compete in the SEC, right? So last year, the SEC got 14 teams into the NCAA tournament. This year, they got 10 in. So you have to think, if you can get in that top 50% of the SEC, you're probably going to get in the NCAA tournament. Does that make sense, boys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So what does that look like? You know, for years and years and years, you win 20 games, you're in the NCAA tournament. Well, that's not really the case anymore. There's just so many teams, so many different conferences, so much matters on who you beat, when you beat them, all that kind of thing. But I did just look at over the last 2 years, teams that have made the NCAA tournament out of the SEC have averaged overall 21.6 wins per season and 9.4 losses. If you want to take that to just last year, it was 21.7 wins and 9.5 losses. So not much difference. You're only looking at a 2-year sample size, right?
Right.
But what was interesting to me is you basically have to get to 10 wins in conference. 10 wins in conference and you're at the average. So let's call it 10-8. So that's what you got to get to. South Carolina over the last 2 years have won 6 games combined in the SEC. So to get to 10 in a season looks to be a monumental task. But just 3 years ago, they won, what was it, Alex? 13, 11, 12?
12, maybe, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, 12. So what I looked at is I wanted to look at the last 2 years. So last year in the NCAA tournament, Auburn was a 1 seed. They didn't make the NCAA tournament this year. 2 years ago, A&M was a 4 seed. They were a 10 seed this year. Ole Miss, 6 seed last year, didn't make it this year. I can go on and on and on. But, you know, you had less teams make it from 2 years ago to this year. So I tried to look at what these SEC NCAA basketball tournament teams have in common. So I looked at their top five scores and kids that have played at least 75% of the games in a season, right? And those five players averaged 63.7 points per game for the average SEC team. So let's call them your starters, right? And obviously we know that guards aren't usually the best rebounders on the team, but the top four rebounders averaged 21.4 rebounds per game. And then the top three assist guys averaged combined 9.8 assists per game. So that was just last year. And so when I look, you know, going forward, where are those gaps for South Carolina? Well, South Carolina's top five scorers averaged 57.5 points per game. So you're already 6 points behind there. How many single-digit losses did the Gamecocks have this year? Then you look at rebounds. This is the glaring one. The top four SEC team or top four players on the SEC team that made the NCAA tournament averaged 21.4 rebounds per game. The Gamecocks averaged 15.3 in their top four. And then assist is one of the things that we've talked about. The ball actually moves for Lamont Paris, but the top three guys averaged 9.8 assists per game for teams that made the tournament. The Gamecocks averaged 8.7. So they're not far off there. So then I decided to go a little bit deeper. And then I'll let you guys talk about this. Went a little bit deeper. What do y'all think, you know, just off the cuff, what was one of the biggest issues for the Gamecocks this year in SEC play?
Shooting.
That's one of them.
I would say turnovers and lack of athleticism.
All right. Well, lack of athleticism. Yeah, the turnovers really weren't that bad. They were actually they ranked top 7 in the conference in turnover percentage. So they took care of the ball. They just couldn't make shots. Rebounding was the big issue. So in SEC games this year, the Gamecocks were negative 59 against their opponents in offensive rebounding and negative 84 in defensive rebounding. In total, negative 143 on rebounds. So opponents got 143 more rebounds combined than the Gamecocks did. So that equates to a deficit of 3.2 offensive rebounds per game and 4.6 defensive rebounds per game, and overall 7.9, right? So teams out-rebounded the Gamecocks by, let's call it, 8 rebounds. So when we start thinking about what the Gamecocks need to go do in the portal, I'm not necessarily saying that the Gamecocks have to go get this player or that player. But what they better make sure they do is they better get 5 players that can score on any given night, 63.7 points combined, 21.4 rebounds out of 4 of them, and then 3 of them, 9.8 assists. And so that's what Lamont Paris has to go find. Now, we can talk about how they find them, but when you're already at a deficit of 6 points per game for your top 5 and you're getting out-rebounded like that, what that means is the opponents are getting on average an extra 3 offensive possessions a game and stopping you 5 times from getting an extra possession because you're not getting the offensive rebound. So I think very first and foremost for this Gamecock team, it's not even a point guard. They got to go get 2 or 3 of them, right? Mm-hmm. They have got to get players that can rebound.
Yeah, rebounding is one thing too, but I also think rim protection is another thing too, where, I mean, you have so many times this year where teams with those big athletic guys on the post, like, they just really had no issue getting to the rim or just didn't have anything to get over from a offensive perspective. Now, so I think, adding into that rebounding part, you got to get some guys who are really good from a defensive perspective, from a rim protection, blocks, that standpoint. And, kind of backs up, your stats here kind of backs up everything we've been saying that South Carolina needs to go into the portal and do. Like, you talk about those assist numbers. Like, how much better would those assist numbers that South Carolina has now be if, they're able to consistently hit some of those shots? Because there's been so many times where, they're working open shot to the corner, they're working open shot to the 3 or to the wing, and those 3s just aren't falling. And you saw that, 2 years ago in that tournament team where they were pretty consistently hitting those shots. In these past 2 years, those assist numbers are still pretty good, but they would be better even if they could just consistently get those shooting numbers up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you gotta have big men. Like, you gotta have guys that can bang down low and not let the other team get easy baskets, and play smart. I think you look at all these teams, they play smart. They move the ball so fast and are just dynamic in their, drawing of plays and whatnot with the coaches. Excuse me. But at the end of the day, I think the most important position is the point guard. You got to have a facilitator that can get you a bucket when a team goes on a run. I just think you got to have that. That's might be my list at the top.
Yeah, so like if we take that and kind of expound it a little bit, let's just look at what we think the Gamecocks are going to have back, and it's not much, y'all. And like these players could still enter the transfer portal.
As we shouldn't have much, right?
Yeah, these guys can still enter the portal, but as of right now, I think that you're going to have four returners, maybe 3, but it's going to be a combination of Cam Scott. I think he's going to be back now. Can he have a late career revitalization? Can he's still only a sophomore next year. Can he go be a guy that can get you 12 to 15? Lamont Paris felt like he was 2 years ago as a freshman. You have Marcus Johnson, Michi's cousin, coming in, a top 100 kid in the country, a point guard. Plays a lot like Michi does, honestly. Then you have Grant Polk, Hayden Simeon, and then Abu Yara. I don't think any of us think that Abu Yara is in a position to be thrown into action next year. Grant Polk, we all know he has those defensive liability issues. And then, Hayden Simeon has his offensive liability. So, looking at that roster, I don't think they can just roll with Marcus at point guard. Like, they're going to have to get at least 2, I would say 3 guys. And, Alex, you and I were talking about this the other day. And in my mind, what you have to go do is you got to find an older guy. It can't be a guy that's coming off a fantastic freshman year in the Southern Conference or the Big South Conference. Like, it needs to be a guy that has a couple years, at least 2, preferably 3 years of college under his belt. If you can find a guy, like, I'm not even allergic to guys that transfer multiple times because that's just what the sport is now. But yep, you go find a point guard that has had success at 2 or 3 spots. So learning the system is not going to be too much for them, but you got to find 2 or 3 of them, right?
I mean, think about Talon Cooper 2 years ago when they brought him in. He had multiple years of the power experience, a few years of power experience at Minnesota. He had that experience. BJ Mack had some experience. Miles Studi had a few years experience at Vanderbilt. Like, I think that experience, and not only experience but power, some of those power seasons on these power teams, that's something they've got to look for, because those guys will know what's expected from a SEC team day in and day out.
Yeah, the biggest thing is evaluation. You know, compare us, evaluate to where we need to get to where we need to be. That is the key. He's only done that 1 year. He did great, you know, picking and choosing guys that fit the mold. And he's only been able to do that 1 out of 4 years, which is not what we're looking for on a consistent basis.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, okay, if you can go find a point guard, and, like, these are arbitrary numbers, y'all, but if you can find a point guard that can get you 10 to 12 a night scoring, let's say, you know, 3 to 4 rebounds, and then somewhere in the 4 to 6 range of assists, like, you need that, right? So, okay, well, now we just got, what is it, 10 of the 63, right? If we're just using that raw math, and got a third to two thirds of the assist. All right. So now what you got to do is you got to go find someone that can get a bucket, because so often this year for South Carolina, what you had were people standing around the 3-point line, or Michi just creating something on his own, drawing fouls. And people, I don't know if they realize this, but Michi averaged 17 points a game this year. So the only guy that scored for you consistently just walked out the door to graduation. So you got to go find some guys that if you could combine a Kobe Knox and a Michi Johnson, that would be fantastic. Because now you have that long, slashing, athletic guy who can also go get buckets. So you got to go find those folks. You got to find a 3-and-D guy. But what they need to get away from, and I think this is what, you know, Justin and Alex, you were kind of talking about, like, BJ Mack worked for a year, but that body style isn't going to work in the SEC. Your big man, your primary big, can't be 6'8" and 250 pounds.
Unless he consistently can hit threes, kind of like BJ Mack did. That's where it can work. If you can't, that's where it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, you need to go find – you got to go find 60 points, and that's the hard part. And, like, that's where I'm worried about, because go ahead.
I was going to say, I'd like to see him. Let's, you know, we've had some success in the year back, you know, decades of picking folks out of Europe or whatnot. I'd like to see him take a stab at that, you know, because we really haven't, you know, exactly. And I think you really find some big guys, so to speak, you know, a diamond in the rough, one or two guys that nobody knows about, that you're willing to bring over here, and next thing you know, a little bit of development goes a long way. Next thing you know, they're giving you 12-8 a game. They may foul out, but they're going to give you 12-8.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll sign up for that in a heartbeat.
And look, let's not forget that was the plan for Oku Federico, who had a decent year this past year, the guy that came over from Sweden with Morris Ugasuk. But – yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, Justin. I've already said my grand plan is you just go find a European team, bring their head coach over, make him the assistant, and you just pay them $12 million combined. Nobody's going to understand what language they're speaking, what they want to run. Just, I mean, bring some 25-year-olds over. I don't care. Like, if they still have eligibility, bring them. You know, my biggest fear is I do think this team is going to have a $12 million floor from an NIL standpoint. I do think that the evaluations have started. At South Carolina, it's not a 10-month evaluation process like it is at some other schools. And honestly, South Carolina isn't even swimming in those waters of the teams that have the 10-month evaluation period. So you're going to have to, like, I know we all want those power four guys to come in and have experience and all that, but I don't know if that's going to be in the cards this year, because everything I've been picking up is the portal is not going to be heavy on star power this year. It's that a lot of teams are going to pay up to retain their guys and not even let them test the portal, especially guys that have been successful, because that's an easy story to sell, right? Like, hey, take that next step here. We're going to pay you more.
And those guys who are going to be in the portal, who are experienced at the power level, who've been really good, everybody's going to want them too.
Yeah. You know, I worry that even with a $12 million budget, they're going to have to overpay for some guys. And, you know, I know that we've kind of coined that Lamont Paris or the Gamecock suck tax. I don't even know if it's going to be that this year. I really don't. I think it's just going to be a sense of, are there guys that are worth giving $12 million? Is there a whole roster? There's definitely not. So, like, what you're going to have to do is go find eight guys that you think you can roll out there and get them ready in an offseason. But, like, that $12 million needs to be spread over eight guys, if I'm being really honest.
Yeah, yeah. I think we kind of talked about that, where, like, your one through eight on the roster kind of need to be where the money goes. Now, you still kind of have to build out the rest of that roster from a nine, from guys 9, 10, 11, because you're going to have injuries. You're going to have things you're going to deal with where those three guys in that 9, 10, 11 spot are going to have to be able to come in and play. But a lot of where I feel like the bulk of that money needs to go is through starting five plus three on the bench.
What's the best case scenario to bring Paris back after a year as far as results?
Like next year?
Yeah. I mean, after next year. Like the results of next year would
get him. Oh, gosh. If it's another year like it's been, like can't justify it.
I'm saying what's the minimum that would get him another year?
I think he has to go to the NCAA tournament. Like, quite frankly, you can't go 1 in 5 years at the SEC level and because you're gonna be buried too much, Justin. You're gonna be buried in recruiting. You're gonna be buried in the program, like against your peers.
Right.
No. After 5 years, you're gonna have to do something. That's what I'm saying. Lamont Paris's back is against the wall. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the $12 million budget. But, like, those numbers I gave you, 63 points, 21 rebounds, and 10 assists, they're not coming from your returners unless Cam Scott has a butterfly transformation. So you're going to have to go find it. So I'm really excited to see what happens over these next 2 weeks. Because, you know, once April 7th hits, I mean, your roster's probably going to be set by April 15th outside of some fringe guys.
Yeah, that's where I was getting at with that question is because he's really in a difficult position, and rightfully it's his own doing. You know, he's been the head coach, he's been in charge of the program, so it's going to be kind of fascinating. So to, I don't know if that's the right word, but really I'm intrigued to see how this kind of forms into shape with this roster.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, look, you know, by the time we come on next week, we'll be right on the cuff of the transfer portal. I think that, you know, this past week, especially around the country, there were a lot of exit meetings with players. You know, South Carolina's obviously happened 2 weeks ago. And I can just tell you that the reason you're seeing this mass exodus right now is that players and coaches were not on the same page as far as what was required of them, expected of them, and, you know, what that dollar figure might look like next year to stay. So it really is going to be a situation with roughly $12 million going forward where you're not really throwing a lot of money at these kids that are sticking around. And look, you know, they're getting the opportunity to play SEC basketball and win and continue. So, yeah, Alex brings up a good point. I don't think we're going to have an Easter show, so we won't be back here on Sunday. Alex just sent that in the private chat here. No Easter show next week, but we will be back. And, wow, we're going to have a lot to talk about after a national championship and after the transfer portal opens. Well, guys, before we get out of here and make way for the SEC Sunday night, guys, Alex, we have the Final Four set. You have UConn versus Illinois and Arizona versus Michigan. What's your national championship game prediction and who wins it this year?
I'm going to go Arizona, but I really like Illinois too. I think they're really playing some good basketball right now, but Arizona's just, you know, I think they're playing the best of the four right now. So I'm going to go Arizona.
So you got Arizona over Illinois?
Yeah.
All right, Justin, are you going to be hedging your UConn future pick?
Yeah, probably. I mean, my bracket's not the, you know, end of the world, but I had Arizona facing UConn and Arizona winning. But I mean, this is a very like intriguing four teams. Illinois is loaded and they are really good. UConn's probably the weakest out of the four, to be honest. And then Michigan has just been dominating and Arizona's been dominating. I mean, that's a really solid game in the semifinals. I mean, I would not be shocked if any one of these four teams wins at all, you know? And I know that's a kind of a, you know, political answer, but I don't know who's going to win.
I need a pick. I need a national championship.
I need a win. Give me Arizona.
Arizona over?
UConn.
All right. I'll be different. How about that? I'm looking at KenPom. It's updated. Michigan's number one in the country. Arizona number two. Illinois number four. And UConn number nine. So you can't argue with the Final Four this year. You got four of the top 10 teams in the country. It should be elite basketball. Dan Hurley's only lost – no, he's never lost a game after the Sweet 16 in his career. He's only lost one game before the Sweet 16. I believe that's the number. Look, I like Brad Underwood. He's a former Gamecock assistant. I want him to win if he can. I was pulling for Iowa, to be quite frank, and I wanted Iowa to win the whole daggum thing just because I love that storyline. But I'm going to take UConn over Illinois again. I said this on our March Madness show. You have to take your licks as a head coach before you can win a national championship, and Underwood got to the Final Four. What I just saw out of UConn to come back from 17 down and the way they blew the doors off Michigan State to start the game two nights ago, I think UConn's playing with house money right now, and I'll give Dan Hurley that. Illinois is going to come out tight. UConn won't. So I'll take UConn over Illinois. And then Michigan, Arizona. I'm going to go Arizona over Michigan just because I, outside of a 1 week sample, y'all, and really for both these teams, outside of 1 week, they've been perfect. I think Arizona plays inside out and they'll get it done against Michigan. And then, you know what? If I said it once, I'll say it again. I'll take UConn to win the national title because Tommy Lloyd has to earn his stripes. He's got that Final Four win under his belt at this point, but it's going to be UConn. It's going to be UConn cutting down the nets again. Dan Hurley is going to be insufferable again. And the guy, I mean, it might just be over. He might just, I'm quote Gary Parrish here. Gary Parrish says, like, maybe Dan Hurley just never loses in March again and never loses in April again. Like, maybe it's just done. The guy's a hell of a coach, and I'll take UConn over Arizona, but Arizona, man, they look good.
Well, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we will not be here next week for Easter. We will be back in 2 weeks. Looking forward to it. Justin, is the promo still going?
The promo has ended. We had a good run. Two straight weekends of good basketball. That we won about 6 or 7 units overall. And more than that, if you did the MLB and NBA. So, but just on the tournament alone, I think it's about 6 or 7 units up till tonight. So hope everyone enjoyed it. And we'll continue to do more promos in the future.
Absolutely. Well, you can find Justin at sportscapvalue.com. You can find Alex Jones on thebigspur.com. You can find me on thebigspur.com. You can find me right here. Alex and I come on multiple shows throughout the week. Happy to talk with y'all there. We hope that you all have a great rest of the week. We hope you all get to celebrate Jesus coming. Remember, y'all, that is why we are all here. And we just love all of you guys. We pray for all of y'all. And we're so excited for this Easter season and the transfer portal. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good one, everybody.
Take care.